I don't think we spend enough time highlighting stories of people who are awesome. So today, the children's entertainer Miss Rachel is receiving a lot of praise and some criticism for her comments about the New York Times. So in this video, I'm going to go over those comments and just what's been going on with Miss Rachel, how incredible she has been over the past few years in standing up for the human rights of Palestinians in a space that you would not necessarily expect to see any sort of activism or, I guess you could argue, political opinions. Though I would also argue against myself here, saying that standing up for human rights should not be viewed as a political opinion. It should simply be viewed as humane empathy. And that's what Miss Rachel has been displaying. So this piece from The Guardian from back in June, Miss Rachel says she'll risk career to advocate for children in Gaza. And of course, she has faced endless backlash from the right wing, including a pro-Israel group, which we'll get to later on because it's going to come into the story, urged the U.S. Attorney General to investigate her over her messaging about children suffering in Gaza. And she's been criticized, as I said, by right-wing media and commentators. The bullying has been endless. She discussed that in May 2024, saying she had faced bullying after launching a fundraiser for children in Gaza, Sudan, Ukraine, and the Democratic Republic of the Congo. She also posted this, which was really cool. This is a few months ago, saying to anyone asking to work with me who hasn't spoken out about Gaza, thank you for the request. I'm not comfortable working with anyone who hasn't spoken out about Gaza. Much love and God bless. It is so rare to find people in positions like this that, political or not, in terms of the position, in terms of the platform, it's rare to find people like this who are willing to take a stand and really advocate for an issue in a way that can financially damage them if they, you know, don't accept certain, whether it's sponsorships or various business dealings, because those individuals will not accept a, I want to say, political position, but again, not a political position, just a position of reality, the reality of what's been going on. And it's good to see her take that kind of stand. She also had on Rahaf. This is a three-year-old double amputee from Gaza who lost her legs in an Israeli airstrike that she did a video with. My last video from a few months ago on Miss Rachel discussed this. I will link to this interview with Democracy Now! Below the video as well. It's worth the watch. But here is the recent controversy. But a lot, from what I've seen, a lot of people are praising her over this. I am unsubscribing from the New York Times because of its biased and dehumanizing coverage of Palestinians and Palestine and its failure to uphold journalistic integrity. So that was a couple days ago. She followed that up with a few more details, saying a leaked internal memo from the New York Times revealed that the editors instructed journalists covering Gaza to avoid or strictly limit certain words and phrases. Words like slaughter, massacre, and carnage were among those flagged. The document also advised journalists to avoid terms such as genocide, ethnic cleansing, occupied territory, and Palestine, except in narrow legal or historical contexts. It discouraged describing Gaza's refugee camps as such, suggesting they be referred to as neighborhoods instead. So this is actually from a piece in The Intercept from April of last year discussing this sort of internal directive. And it, I want to be clear, it's not just New York Times. I'm going to get to a couple examples from Canada where this similar thing has also been going on. But, you know, if you noticed very skewed coverage, and I'm sure you did over the past few years about the genocide that's been happening, the difference in language used when a Palestinian is a victim versus when an Israeli is a victim is stark. So The Intercept goes on to write here, their analysis showed that the major newspapers reserved terms like slaughter, massacre, and horrific almost exclusively for Israeli civilians killed by Palestinians rather than for Palestinian civilians killed by Israeli attacks. The analysis found that as of November 24, the New York Times had described described Israeli deaths as a massacre on 53 occasions and those of Palestinians just once. The ratio for the use of slaughter was 22 to 1, even as the documented number of Palestinians killed climbed to around 15,000, and of course it's gotten much worse. But this is the kind of language that was used to try and push a certain narrative. The Times does not characterize Israel's repeated attacks on Palestinian civilians as terrorism, even when civilians have been targeted. This is also true of Israel's assaults on protected civilian sites, including hospitals. This also gets to how we have to analyze it, how we view things internally based on what we read. Because it is very normal for people to think that an attack done by a government is not a terrorist attack, even if that attack is killing civilians. Because a government is doing it, it's viewed differently, and it shouldn't be. So what the Israeli government have been committing, and not just during the genocide, but also talking apartheid more broadly, these are the acts of terrorists. But it's terrorism under the guise of a government. Now, it is the government, but just because it is the government does not mean that we shouldn't be able to categorize it as the terrorism that it is. This also gets to, as I was saying, Canada. So The Breach has a couple of great pieces on this. The Maple also done some great reporting on this. This is from November, a couple of years ago. CTV forbids use of Palestine, suppresses critical stories about Israel. So I will link to this below. There's another one that they ran, though, a couple years later. National Post quietly rewrote wire stories to push pro-Israel narrative, analysis finds. So this is just incredible, but not surprising. Terms such as Palestinian, quote-unquote, militants or fighters replaced with terrorists. Pro-Palestine changed to anti-Israel. Occupied Palestinian territory or occupied West Bank removed or substituted with disputed territory. Allegedly inserted to cast doubt on documented Israeli war crimes and Palestinian narratives. A clear directive to try and skew the reader a certain way. View certain deaths as not the same as others. Miss Rachel followed up her previous Instagram post with this. Real question from the New York Times for my interview. Last month, you condemned blocking food and water to children. There are some who argue that accusing Israel of doing this, as well as citing certain casualty numbers, amounts to misinformation. How would you respond? Before we even get to her response, look at how this question is phrased and loaded. It should be on the New York Times to fact check, to not give light to things that aren't true, to try and make it seem like there's an equal argument on both sides when there isn't a both sides, when there is simply fact and fiction. That is on the New York Times to do that. It is not on the person you're interviewing to dispel bullshit narratives. It is on you, the journalist, to do that. But they're presenting this question as if this is an opinion that is worth valuing, when it simply is not. Now, her response to that was, I take my work with children and the way I utilize my platform very seriously. That is why I turn to the expertise of entities like the United Nations, as well as respected human rights organizations, including Israeli organizations and research and reporting from outlets like Haaretz and the New York Times. So, which is, this is what the New York Times should be doing. It's looking at what the UN is saying, what human rights organizations are saying, including ones within Israel, like B'Tselem, what they are saying. Their acknowledgement of the realities on the ground. Yet, they are putting it to Miss Rachel to dispel the bullshit. So, this is the New York Times piece from back in May on Miss Rachel. Why taught celebrity Miss Rachel waded into the Gaza debate. Facing criticism, Rachel Accurso defends making the plight of children in Gaza a primary focus of her social media feeds. Now, something incredible about this piece is their attempt to highlight criticisms of her as legitimate when they simply are not. And they clearly are not based on the information given by New York Times in the piece about those criticisms. So, case in point, they write here, last month, the advocacy group Stop Anti-Semitism labeled Accurso the anti-Semite of the week, and the New York Post reported, sent a letter urging Attorney General Pam Bondi to investigate whether Accurso is receiving funding to further Hamas's agenda. And then they move on. Without telling you, this group simply exists to defend the Israeli government. It's not about stopping anti-Semitism. And they also don't give the context that Attorney General Pam Bondi is an insane person and asking the Trump administration to investigate Miss Rachel is an absolutely insane thing to do. So again, giving space to these completely baseless accusations. Now, Miss Rachel goes on to say things that I think are so obvious, but oddly need to be said in the face of a website like the New York Times. Normal and just being a good person. Wanting kids to not be killed. Wanting kids to not lose limbs. Wanting kids to have food. Wanting kids to have homes. Wanting kids to go to school. Not normal and absurd. Accusing people of being anti-Semitic or paid by Hamas because they want these basic human rights for kids and people. Now, all this, of course, obvious, I would hope, to most of you. One thing you may be wondering is, why is this just coming out now? When the interview was a few months ago, the report about the New York Times in The Intercept was a year ago. I don't know. I think it may have something to do with this recent letter. So, from Common Dreams here, 300-plus writers boycott New York Times opinion pages over shameful anti-Palestinian Gaza coverage. So, it's possible Miss Rachel just was not all that tuned in to what the New York Times had been writing about Palestinians and about the Israeli government, and is now more aware of that because of this letter and more coverage of what the New York Times has been writing. So as Common Dreams writes here, because you also may be wondering, why does it matter what the New York Times says? It actually incredibly does matter. Even if it may not matter to you or me, it actually very much does. As Common Dreams writes here, the U.S. government's continued support for Israel, they suggested, would likely not have been possible without the New York Times. Quote, there is no American media institution more influential than the New York Times, reads the letter. Editors and producers in newsrooms across the West take cues from its coverage. It uniquely shapes political consensus on U.S. foreign policy, and it is widely considered the paper of record in the U.S. The politicians who vote to ship 500-pound bombs to Israel do not read emails from their constituents. They read the Times. So it's not about how many people read the New York Times. It's about who reads the New York Times. That is why it is incredibly influential. That is why it's important to have this sort of criticism of it, where you have 300-plus writers come out against, where you have Miss Rachel, who has a platform that goes beyond just politics and news, discussing this. So it helps to permeate the reality that most people are living in, and now hopefully are made more aware of how the New York Times has potentially shaped their opinion on what's been going on because of how they've been writing these stories. Last thing I want to end on here is just highlighting how awesome it is to see Miss Rachel as one of the Women of the Year for Glamour magazine. So they went on to write here, she redefined children's media by centering empathy. Now she's channeling that same ethos into activism. And I'm going to end on here, just in case you did not see this, a clip of her accepting the award, or I guess one of the awards at the Glamour Woman of the Year Awards. And it is just, it's fantastic.
Tonight, I am wearing this beautiful dress that has art from kids in Gaza. And these kids are just amazing. They're so thoughtful and so brilliant. And I know all their names and stories, Luna and Ahmed, Rama, Rana. I'm so proud of you. I'm so honored to wear your artwork. Rana made this beautiful drawing. She lost both of her sisters in the genocide. She lost her 9-month-old sister, Haya, in her arms in an airstrike. Her older sister was killed the next month. I want to end with her words because they're more important than mine. Rana wanted to say, I want to tell the world that my sisters are not numbers. They are moons. They are like the stars. They shine and sparkle.
If you enjoyed this video, please hit like and subscribe and check out some of the other videos I have on this channel.